countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Get Irish Country Living, your magazine for rural Ireland, every week inside the Irish Farmers Journal.
This is a longer version of an interview with Vice Admiral Mark Mellett for RTE Radio 1 Countrywide in June 2021.
You can see the path up to the saddle. I remember as a youngster I used to climb that every year. We used to climb it at night time. Because I'm going to Murrisk for a week's break in August and I'll certainly be climbing it then.
We're on Rosmoney Pier and there's a northerly wind, and this is where you first learned how to sail.
I'll never forget it. I was a young reservist with the 5th Motor Squadron, and anybody who knows a motor squadron knows that the first thing you have to do is learn how to sail. So I was over here with the CO Mick Considine, who served in Congo. That's when I kind of really enjoyed the sea. My dad had a boat in Killary Harbour, and I stayed on with the reservist for another 2 years after that. I reached the rank of corporal, and in November 1976 I joined the Defence Forces as a naval cadet. And I've been with the Defence Forces for nearly 45 years since then, so you could say a long time to be idle.
We're very close to the Atlantic. What do you see?
Well, I see a jurisdiction where we as citizens in this state have an extraordinary privilege, an area of almost 1 million square kilometres where we have sovereignty or sovereign rights, an area which is rich in biodiversity, rich in resources. I see an area that actually, when you combine it with what we have on land, is probably the richest food producing ecosystem and renewable energy environment on the planet. And that's within the sovereign control of the Irish state. But I suppose what I also see is a historical perspective, because I was just thinking as I came in here, 450 years ago, one of the biggest actors around this area was Grainne Whale, the pirate queen. And she was challenging norms and principles at the time. She was, I suppose, retaliating against the control by the Crown of this area. And at the same time, in another jurisdiction, Hugo Grotius was developing some of the principles that underpin the law of the sea as we know today, Mare Liberum. It's that tension that I, throughout my life as a naval officer, have been tasked by government to navigate between the idea of enclosure, which requires restrictions, and that idea of freedom. And I always say it, whether it's on land or at sea, freedom is not free. For us to actually have a civil society, you have to conform with certain norms and principles. And so from the point of view of what's happening now and what will happen in the future, it's going to be really down to the norms and principles that we define as society that will ensure the sustainable development of our marine resource, this extraordinary resource we have, and at the same time ensuring that we do not damage it in a manner whereby we have an intergenerational sabotage, which I'm afraid is happening as we speak. And we can see that in the evidence of climate breakdown in terms of biodiversity loss. There are really, really worrying challenges ahead of us. The impact on security on land, the impact on security in the maritime, but they also impact on our potential for survival. I can say one thing as a fact. The very reason we as a species are still alive is because of the biosphere that the ocean is. I don't think everybody recognises it, but the ocean absorbs 30% of the carbon that we produce. About another 20% is absorbed by terrestrial ecosystems, and about 50% basically just remains in the system. That's an extraordinary amount of carbon. And the penalty for the ocean is it's becoming more acidic. And I look out at the sea there and I see some wonderful ecosystems, vulnerable marine ecosystems. Recently we've heard about the bleaching of the Great Barrier Reef, which is probably the largest living infrastructure on the planet, and it is dying because of the impact of climate change. We have rich ecosystems, vulnerable marine ecosystems in our own jurisdiction, but we don't see them. There are cold water corals, for instance, are about 600 metres down. They sit on sea mounds just on the break as we go into the deep ocean from the Porcupine Bank. All along there, one of the richest areas of cold water corals in the world is off the west coast of Ireland. Beautiful, beautiful ecosystems. And because we don't see it, I don't always think that we value it. And yet it's a key part of the ecosystem that is there. The way life survives is on the basis of a balance in that ecosystem. And arresting the actual penalty of carbon absorption in the ocean is a critical piece. I suppose I have a sense of optimism, however, in terms of the government's climate action plan, which is looking towards a 51% reduction in carbon by 2030, the actual promise of 5 gigawatts of offshore renewable energy by 2030, and probably another 30 gigawatts in the years that follow. People don't realise what 5 gigawatts of energy is. It's nearly 60 Ardna crushes. It's just phenomenal what is potentially going to unfold in front of us. A huge opportunity in terms of technology, in terms of innovation. And so if this goes in the right direction, if we move to that 51% by 2030 and carbon zero by 2050 and beyond, we have a real chance of arresting the penalty in terms of our arrogance in terms of the environment up to now. And we will arrest that danger of intergenerational sabotage, because this generation is actually robbing from future generations in the way it's utilising resources as if there is no tomorrow.
In your role as head of the Defence Forces, you've had to deal with several recent threats. We've had the pandemic, which we're living with, and then the cyber security issue as well. Do you see any link at all with the climate breakdown issue?
Well, I think the literature speaks for itself, and there is no doubt that there is increasing evidence of a pathogen shift from one species to another as a consequence of a reduction in biodiversity. Actually, it's the diversity that gives you the sustainability and resilience. And when you start reducing the richness of biodiversity, strange things happen. And so there's a combination of growing populations, I suppose greater engagement and risks associated with pathogen jumps, and that's what we have in this case of a virus that I think the jury's still out as to where it came from, but it has actually certainly interfered with human beings in a manner that we don't have the protections from it. So it is an indicator of perhaps things to come into the future, and it's a challenge for us all in the context of actually having a greater resilience in our systems to deal with shocks like that. And that's where the Defence Forces, I think, came into its own. For me, today is day 450 that we have been actively involved through Joint Task Force Fortitude to deal with the pandemic, supporting the health services, supporting the NGOs, supporting Department of Health and other parts of government in trying to arrest the impact of COVID on the citizens of the state. And I'm really proud of the women and men of our Defence Forces who have really given extraordinary services, whether it be tracing or testing, in terms of tentage, in terms of transport, nearly 4,000 tonnes of PPE distributed through 259 flights. What we're doing at present in terms of vaccination centres, I think everybody who hopefully has got their vaccine or will soon get their vaccine, they'll meet some of our personnel who are either vaccinators or else part of the governance side. And also we have, I think, six cyber incident response teams supporting the Department of Health and HSE at present in terms of restoration of the IT infrastructure for our health services. As we speak, there's a full-scale hybrid war in Ukraine at present, in particular on the eastern frontier of Ukraine following the annexation of Crimea. That's different to anything we've experienced in the past. It's interference with critical national infrastructure. It's built around information. It's built around cyber. It's built around shaping citizens' opinions. And so we have to be careful about cyber and the impact of it. It can be state on state. It can be criminal on state. It can be criminal on enterprise. And the ability to arrest that and to actually be able to be resilient from that is about technology, but also about the institutions of the state being able to put the defences that are there to actually ensure that our enterprise is protected, our institutions of civil society are protected, our institutions of government are protected, in particular important services like health services, and that our critical national infrastructure is properly reflected and protected.
And the Navy really brought the whole migrant issue home, and the movement of populations due to climate breakdown when Navy ships went down to the Mediterranean. Do you see the Navy being able to return there at any stage?
Well, it's really a matter for government, but we did over the last number of years through Pontus initially, which is a bilateral with Italy, and subsequently through Sofia and now Irini, we've been supporting dealing with what is really a symptom of a much bigger problem. We rescued in total directly nearly 18,000 people, 23,000 if you take those who we rescued and put onto other ships. And it was really tragic to see the circumstances in which these human beings had been forced into. Most had come from many long journeys. Some had come from Syria, some had come from West Africa, some from East Africa. And really, while treating the symptoms in the Mediterranean is important in the context of saving life, the real obligation, I suppose, on states is to deal with the root causes. And that plays out in places like the tri-border area in Burkina Faso, Niger and Mali, where we have two missions and Irish troops at present, trying to support local institutions in terms of a safe and secure environment. But the penalty that is there is actually a penalty from climate change to some degree, whereby you have Fulani herders who are now aligned with extremist armed elements, in some cases just to protect themselves, dealing with Dogon farmers who have their own armed elements to protect them. And this is a penalty whereby resources are becoming constrained. And Fulani, who would be pastoralists, who would over the centuries have been nomadic in terms of moving through jurisdictions, what's happening now is jurisdictions are becoming more firm, states are actually laying claim to state property rights, and farmers are exercising their private property rights, which means that the ability to move with freedom is being constrained, and ways of living that have been there for centuries are being constrained, and as a consequence it becomes a point of conflict and danger. And with the advent and reduction in terms of resources from climate change and the desertification of that region, it is likely to become more challenging into the future. As if that's not enough, you also have the concern over population increase. I mean, there is a prediction that the population of Africa could double by 2050 or 2055. And these challenges can only be addressed through a multilateral framework. No one state has all the answers. And similarly, in terms of climate change, it won't be started by just one state. That's why I think it's very important and great to see the leadership Ireland has given in the context of the UN Security Council, whereby we currently have a seat. And I do know that we are very exercised in two key areas, the climate and security, and also women, peace and security. And these are critical, I think, in terms of going forward to try and improve the safe and secure environment in many challenging places in the world.
So when you look out at Ireland's wonderful big blue field out there, you see nightmarish storms ahead.
You know, I'm an optimist, and I hate the word nightmare, because I think just if we drop our heads and look at it from a nightmare scenario point of view, we could tend to lose hope. The world as we know it, and the Earth as a planet, has gone through five main extinction periods in the past. And I often look back and I wonder, you know, what do the reptiles and the dinosaurs think about it, you know, in terms of their imminent doom? Well, first of all, they probably didn't know it was coming, and even if they did, they couldn't do anything about it. The difference today is we have an extraordinary intelligence in terms of human beings, and we've made extraordinary growth in terms of the growth of technology, in growth of artificial intelligence, intelligence augmentation, virtual reality, Internet of Things, robotics, automation. There is a huge opportunity for us with our intelligence to be able to address the challenges that are ahead of us. The only way, however, is through a multilateral framework. But not just in terms of state working with state, this has to pepper back down into organisations that they themselves look at their own strategies in the context of how they're embracing the Sustainable Development Goals. And then it comes right back to us as individuals and our values and the way we actually make decisions with regards to, do we need to buy that fruit that has been flown halfway around the world, or will we make do with local produce and help local enterprise in your area? That's the decisions we have. They're the choices we will make. And I think those people are beginning to become alert to that now in terms of what we can do ourselves, starting as individuals, then within our families and our organisations, and driving that right up to state level. So, you know, as we look forward to where we are here beside the sea, the whole idea of the Maritime Area Regulatory Authority, which will be part of the Maritime Area Planning Framework, which is legislation that will actually oversee the governance of the ocean and the maritime, so that we can actually ensure that these renewable energy installations can be built, you know, in a manner whereby there is norms and principles and regulatory oversight. And I think one of the big challenges ahead will be to look at greater marine protected areas in areas off the west coast here. And it's not all, you know, negative in terms of a marine protected area. You get spillover on the boundaries, which actually can be a very rich fishery. So I have a sense of optimism. What doesn't get measured doesn't get done. So setting targets like 51% by 2030 is very ambitious, but it is a target, so let's get measuring towards it. And the idea of zero carbon by 2050 is actually essential if we're to arrest the general growth in global temperatures.